Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, my guest is the multi-talented Benny Golson, known the world over for his wonderful compositions, horn playing, arranging, and now, thanks to Steven Spielberg's film, The Terminal, we can add movie star.
I laugh when you say that.
Well, it's true. That was quite a film. How did that all come about?
Much to my surprise, I was in Europe at the time, and I got a call from the office out in Los Angeles, and they said, we got a call from Steven Spielberg today, and he wants to know if you're interested in a small speaking role with Tom Hanks in his new film. And I said, no. And the reason I said no is because a few years ago I got a call from Woody Allen's office.
Oh.
You know, and yeah. When I went down, I thought it was he just wanted me. And when I went down, there were about 10 guys there. And I guess they pick whomever they wanted, and it wasn't me.
Oh,
and then
what a drag.
About a year or so later, I got another call from his office. I said, well, maybe it's different this time. And when I went down, there were about 20 guys there this time, and I didn't get it again. Then I got some calls for television commercials. I never got any of those. So I thought it was one of those things, you know, I would go there and it was like a cattle call. They would say, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, and it wouldn't be me. And they said, no, I think he wants you. I said, really? Which came as a surprise. And then when I talked to him, I know I'm not an actor. I asked him, who would I be portraying? I was concerned. He said, yourself. And I thought, well, I guess I can do that. And then I had a screen test here in New York City. And they had sent me a script, and it wasn't very involved. It was some words that I had to say to Tom. And I went down, and I did the screen test. But after I finished it, I just felt it wasn't what a musician would say. It didn't seem authentic. It just
It didn't sound hip?
No, it sounded too structured and kind of square.
Yeah.
So they said, well, do it again the way a musician would do it. And I did it, and they sent it to Steve, and he said, that's it. Great. So then he told me that they would be recording up in Montreal and that they would build a nightclub set for me. And then I found out what the picture was about, more or less. It centered on me, although you didn't know that until the end of the picture. And throughout the picture, Tom was bent on getting my autograph, and that's what it was all about.
So that's the real story.
That's the real story.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
And now, do you think we should play something? We've got wonderful Rufus Reed here on bass.
Yes.
Well, let's put all of ourselves to work.
What would we have done had we not had the blues? Let's begin with the blues.
That's a great idea.
Let's begin with a tune called Pierre's Moment.
Okay. Thank you. Gee, that was great. It's so nice to get to play together after all this time.
It has been a long time, too long. But time couldn't have been so cruel as to keep us apart indefinitely. It had to happen.
It really did, and I'm glad it has. But other than the movie, what other things have you been doing? You've worked with so many people, I can't keep track.
Well, I'm always trying to come up with new tunes. Some of the tunes come a little hard, you know, you have to develop things, and then some of them jump out at you screaming, "Here I am!" You know, but it all boils down to being an adventure and giving birth, metaphorically.
Yeah. Well, now, how did you make out when you did Along Came Betty?
An interesting story, and it goes way back. Marion, it goes back to the 50s when I was with a rhythm and blues group called, I hesitate to tell you this, I might mar my reputation, but the group was called Bull Moose Jackson and his Buffalo Bearcats. I was a Buffalo Bearcat, and we played rhythm and blues, no jazz. And
that's how you started out?
Oh, yeah, I started out as a rhythm and blues player. Oh, yeah.
I never knew that.
And I'm going to surprise you with something else. You know who the drummer was in that group?
No.
Philly Joe Jones. We had to eat, Marion. And the pianist was Tad Dameron.
Good heavens.
That's where I met him. Yes.
Well, you know, I guess you start someplace, and that's what happened.
Quite an anachronism, really, musically. And we had the occasion to play a little town called Dayton, Ohio. And it was there where I met a lovely young lady named Betty Pritchett. And we struck up a relationship. And it became so intense that I thought perhaps one day we would lock arms and walk off into the sunset together.
Really?
Yes. But things didn't work out quite that well, Marion. One day the sun came up, and she walked off without me, Marion. However, as time went by, I found myself in another group. This time it was a jazz group. It was Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. I was quite happy about that. And we played Washington, D.C. And there I met another lovely young lady whose name was not Betty, but Bobby. Get the alliteration there? Benny, Betty, Bobby. It kind of rolls off of the tongue.
Three B's.
The bees, yes, 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 yes. And I didn't trust the sun this time, so I married her quickly. And you know, when you first get married, Marion, your mate is always right by your side, at least in the beginning. And I would meet people, and they would shake my hand and turn to her, and they know that they had nailed it on the head and say, "And you must be Betty." But of course, she was Bobby. And this didn't go over too well for a while.
I think not.
You know, and I'd often thought about changing the title from Along Came Betty to Along Came Bobby. Too late.
It is much too late.
Some things can't be changed. Maybe we ought to try playing it since we're talking about it.
I think we should.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
It's a great tune.
Let's try it.
Okay. Such a good tune. And you know, you write tunes people remember.
I think I
read that somebody said that about you.
Yeah, I love the melodies. I'm from the old school.
Well, that's good, because sometimes you think the melody has got lost.
It gets lost sometimes.
Well, there ain't no melody.
Right.
Something like that. Well, I should let our listeners know that we are here today with Benny Golson. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. on the web at pianojazz.npr.org. Well, I was wondering, since the movie, Benny, have you written any new things?
I've written a few things. They're on my new CD. But you know, strangely enough, Marion, when I make personal appearances, even though I've written some of the new things, people always tend to ask for the old things. And I said, well, I've written some new things, but we want to hear some of the old things. And as a result, I play many of the old things, one of which was Along Came Betty, and I remember Clifford and some of the other things like that.
Well, I remember Clifford was a gem, is a gem. I mean, that's something that you would always be asked to play. In fact, I'm going to ask you to play it. Can we play it?
We can play it. I think I should let you know a little something about the tune, which might let you know something about the man, Clifford Brown. During those days, we go back now about 50 years, he was not called Clifford. Everybody called him Brownie.
I remember that.
Affectionately, he was Brownie, yes. And while he was yet ascendant, 25 years of age, he met with a tragic automobile accident on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Late one night or early in the morning, however you look at it. He was asleep on the back seat. The pianist Richard Powell was asleep on the passenger seat, and Richard's new bride was driving the car on the way to Chicago to meet the other part of the group awaiting their arrival, who was Max Roach, Sonny Rollins, and George Morrow, the bass player. And it happened to be raining torrents, and she was driving, and she probably didn't have a great deal of experience. And she was attempting to pass a tractor trailer, and the spray from the back wheels overpowered the windshield wipers just as the road made an abrupt right turn. Not being able to see, she went straight ahead.
Wow.
Into a bridge abutment, and they were all killed instantly. And it left our hearts quite heavy, you know. And when we got to Los Angeles about a week later, I decided that I would write a tune or attempt to write a tune to help people remember Clifford. But little did I know that he didn't need my help. He left so many things behind in the way of recordings as a legacy that we still embrace and enjoy today. But nevertheless, I did. And when Dizzy heard it, he decided that he would like to record it. And he was recording for Norman Grandstand. And he had a recording session coming up in about 4 weeks from the time we spoke. But there was a young fellow in the band, 19 years old, named Lee Morgan, and Blue Note had latched on to him, and his first recording session was coming up not in 4 weeks, but 2 weeks. So Lee Morgan was the first to record it. Dizzy was the second. You might remember a fellow named Donald Byrd, a trumpet player, who recorded for
well,
Columbia.
Might remember him, yes.
Yes, Dr. Byrd now.
Yes, indeed.
And lo and behold, I thought it was a trumpet piece, but then Sonny Rollins recorded it. And then George Shearing did it, and Oscar Peterson. And my good friend John Hendricks put a very lovely lyric to it. And who did it? Carmen McRae did it with strings, and then Dinah Washington. And then many people did it. And you know, Marion, I go to Japan from time to time, and I discovered that the Japanese are a punctilious people. They keep track of everything. And
sure.
One night a fellow came into the club and he says, do you have any idea how many recordings there are on I Remember Clifford? And I said, no, not at all. He said, 334. I was floored. Yes. I mean, you can ask those people who played third alto with Benny Goodman in 1937 and they'll tell you.
Amazing.
So maybe we should get into it, huh?
Maybe we should. Let's play it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'll bet Brownie, wherever he is, would love that.
I hope so, Marion. Yeah, we all still remember and love him.
Yes, indeed.
Marion?
Yes, sir?
You know, you have such a vast repertoire, and I haven't heard you do a solo in such a long time. Why don't you do something for me while I sit here and imbibe it and enjoy it?
I'd love to. Well, what would you like? A Duke Ellington piece or a...
When you go into the realm of Duke Ellington, you can't go wrong. Anything you select is appropriate.
All right, let's say Prelude to a Kiss.
Fantastic. I always knew you were a hopeless romantic anyway.
Thank you.
Marion, that was absolutely beautiful. You not only played Duke Ellington, but you injected yourself into it. And this is what it's all about as a musician. You play other people's things, but you extrapolate as you play. You give it a new twist, new meaning, shine it up and give it a little luster sometimes with your own personality. And that's what I heard. Very, very nice. Music that not only reaches the ear, but reaches down into the deep grotto of the heart, you know?
Thank you, sir. Well, we'll have more in a minute with Benny Golson. For more information about piano jazz and a list of the tunes played on today's show, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Our program is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR.